From the land of the free and the home of the Chiefs, this is the Locked On Chiefs podcast.
The Kansas City Chiefs are in trouble when it comes to Chris Jones, and they are getting ready to face a very different season. Welcome back to Locked On Chiefs. I'm Ryan Tracy, the founder of Rogue Analytics, as well as your host over at RGR Football. And we have a lot to talk about today. We're going to talk about Chris Jones in this second coming segment because there's a lot to unpack there. It happened late last night, and I'm going to go through it. But today we got some announcements about what the NFL is planning to change and a couple of important things. They're still planning on the July 28th date being the day that teams report to the facility to begin work. But they have decided that the first week of preseason is now going to be canceled. The last week, game four of the preseason, is now going to be canceled. So you're looking at two games, the week of August 20th through the 24th, and the week of the 27th through the 31st. Those are the dates that you're going to have preseason football as it stands right now. And then, if everything goes according to plan, and there are games and nobody gets any mass breakouts of the infection, and they're able to continue to field a team and to field practices and keep going, the Kansas City Chiefs are in a position where they're going to be a guinea pig. It's going to be the first contest mixing in for the regular season. It is September 10th, and the Chiefs-Texans game is the first on the docket. So there will be a bit of dress rehearsal, a ramp up for the Chiefs in particular in getting ready to play the first game of the season. It's very interesting, and I'm not sure that this is going to be the end of it. A couple of comments that came from around the league by people who know. We know that the Saints have canceled their offseason to this point, and that they have done what a lot of teams have not. They've gone drastically the other way, and it's not that they're done, and I don't think the NFL is done as well. A really interesting comment from the report about week one and week four of the preseason being canceled, being removed from the games. Is Chase Daniel, an old friend and quarterback, who says many more changes are coming than just this. The 2020 NFL season will not be recognizable, that's for sure. That is a quote from his Twitter account. And that's really, I think, some inside information about what the teams are being told that maybe we just haven't heard about yet, because the league is still developing how they're going to communicate, how they're going to go through this process. And getting to that point is difficult. And I think it's still much like we said earlier with Matt yesterday, that it's not done. They can't have a full plan yet. They're going to have to roll with some of these punches. And I think the punches are still going to come. And the last complication that takes that to the next level is that, yes, they have said we're not going to have these games, but the NFLPA hasn't signed off on that either. They haven't signed off on playing any games. And they had the communication to the agents the other day, and now we're hearing through some of the NFL network folks that there's some in the union leadership that continue to think maybe they shouldn't play any preseason at all, let alone see what happens when the fall comes around and there are actual season games to play. This is going to be very, very interesting to see how it all turns out, and it looks like Thursday there's going to be a player rep call from the NFLPA to get some kind of consensus about where the players are. We should hear something from that as well, and that will give us a better idea of where we think the union as a whole may be lying. Now, when we get back, we have to get into this Chris Jones thing, and then we're going to talk with Matt Derrick again on another topic later in the show.
One reason to repair and maintain your cars is to save money that you can then use on important things like mortgage or food. Why would you choose to spend 30, 50, or 100% more on the same auto parts at a chain store or a new car dealership? RockAuto.com is a family business serving auto parts customers online for 20 years. Go to RockAuto.com to shop for auto and body parts from hundreds of manufacturers. They have everything from engine control modules and brake parts to tail lamps, motor oil, and even new carpet. Whether it's for your classic or daily driver, get everything you need in a few easy clicks delivered directly to your door. The RockAuto.com catalog is unique and remarkably easy to navigate. Quickly see all the parts available for your vehicle and choose the brand, specifications, and prices you prefer. Best of all, prices at rockauto.com are always reliably low, and the same for professionals and do-it-yourselfers. Why spend twice as much for the same parts? Go to rockauto.com right now and see the parts that are available for your car or truck. Write "Locked On" in their "How did you hear about us" box so they know that we sent you. Amazing selection, reliably low prices, all the parts your car will ever need. rockauto.com.
So if you heard the first part of our conversation yesterday with Matt, Derek, and I, we covered some of the Chris Jones situation. That's what it was 24 hours ago. It's not that same thing right now. And we have to get into a little bit. It all comes from Chris's reaction online to another report being reposted. It came from Mike Garofalo of the NFL Network, and his reaction to that was really just about, hey, there's another option where maybe, quote unquote, I won't play. Le'Veon Bell told me about this, unquote. And that's really, that's taking it up a level. That's a threat in and of itself to not be happy with the situation, to consider sitting out a year. Now, we heard a lot about what happened with Le'Veon Bell. And if you remember at the time, I told you that Chris Jones hanging out with him is not really the best scenario influence for what the Chiefs and Chris Jones and his people are trying to get done in reaching a long-term contract. And I do feel that both sides of this conversation still do want to reach a long-term contract. I don't think that's changed. I think it really does come down to the value of what Chris Jones sees for his future versus what the Chiefs see for them willing to pay for his future. And I don't think those numbers are terribly close. I don't think it's a slight against Chris, and I don't think that it's anything that can't be overcome either. I do want to say that. If this does spark conversation, I think that's a good thing all the way around, because you can figure out exactly where you lie with the difference in the valuation of what you think he should be paid going forward. I will say this, though, that I don't think it's a good idea for Chris Jones to try and threaten something if he's not willing to carry it out. And if he is willing to carry it out, I question his decision-making, because the difference for Le'Veon Bell is he'd earned quite a lot more money before he got to the point where he took a year off in refusing to sign the franchise tender, franchise tag tender. That it makes for a whole lot of different lifestyle, different process. And quite frankly, a year at your peak, at the height of your career, trying to let that go, I think is a mistake for any player. But especially if there's no extending circumstances, like an extended injury rehab or something like that, I could see maybe in that kind of situation. But in this, I just can't. So I do feel that it's still in the best interest for them to move forward and try to reach an agreement. I just don't know if this makes it more or less likely. My gut reaction is that it makes it less likely. I don't think it was probably received very well. If the team is even paying attention to social media, there's a lot of teams that just consider it all bluster and they're not really going to pay attention. There are teams who do. I don't know exactly where the Chiefs lie with how much they're going to put into a statement on social media. These days, more and more players communicate that way. So I think they're going to hunker down. They're going to stick with Chris Jones's representatives, and they're going to work the traditional way of front office to player agent. And I don't think they're going to get too distracted by that. But it comes down to a situation that I talked about over on the RGR channel. I think it was last week. It might have been 2 weeks ago. And that if this has significantly changed, if this statement or getting to this point without a contract, because that's really what it's about, if you've gotten to this point and feelings have changed, a relationship has changed, and this or any other statement or what they're talking about, team to representatives, changes, and the team now feels, if they get to the point where they feel, hey, we're just not going to get this done, we're not going to arrive at a number that makes him happy, that he'll agree to, and that we're still comfortable paying for, knowing that we have to get the Mahomes deal done. And yes, at the end of the day, the quarterback takes precedence, period, especially somebody with the talent of Patrick Mahomes. You're not going to handcuff yourself when you're trying to deal with his upcoming contract. But there are others. There's Frank Clark. There's Travis Kelce. There's Tyrann Mathieu eventually. I think Tyrann's under contract in 2020 and 2021. So you could see an extension being needed there as well. But if you're just to the point where you're sure you can't get anything done, and this changed it or whatever changed it, and you just don't feel that the future has anything for you other than the possibility of a second franchise tag or him completely sitting out for a season, that puts you in a very bad situation. And I think that does take you to the point where seeking a trade now becomes more about trying to get something done rather than sticking to what I think pre-draft was. We had to have X number of compensation. It had to be a first round pick, et cetera. A very similar situation to what the Jets are in with Jamal Adams. And that's something I talked about last week. I'm not going to go into too much depth about it. You can find it over on the RGR YouTube channel. But if both teams like that are in a situation where they don't feel they have a long-term future because they can't get deals done with their players, it is more of a likelihood that they could try to work out a deal where they trade disgruntled player position for position if the other one is willing to pay. That's what it is, because both players are going to need a new contract eventually. I think you have an extra year with Jamal Adams. I think he said that he's willing to wait it out if he goes to a contender, etc. Just a report today that he was trying to get to Dallas and had a conversation with the fan where he said, hey, I'm working on it. You know, so there's definitely some specific places he'd like to go. Chiefs are one of them, and I think Dallas is definitely at the top of the list. But that going forward, if we take a step back, we have to talk about what's the absence of Chris Jones make the Chiefs look like right now. And I've gone through this the whole season. Is I expected him to come in at the last minute, sign his tag, play, report to camp at the last minute, do everything at the bare minimum to make sure that he is within his rights, but also accruing a season, getting that tag and being eligible for the increased tag should the Chiefs have to do it a second time. I'm not so sure that happens now. Again, I don't know if it's something that's the best move for him, but I think saying something like that on social media and calling into Lev Bell, that's either a lot of posturing or it's something you're really willing to do. And if you do that, it leaves you in a bad position, and you can deal with the ramifications of what the CBA will allow the team to do if a season is accrued, which we don't know about because of what we talked about in the opening. But it also sets you up to be, what does your defensive line look like in 2020 if you are able to play? We don't know if that's going to happen, but if they do, the Chiefs are light on interior pass rushers right now. Colin Saunders looks to get a lot more reps if Chris Jones is not in camp and not willing to play. Yes, Derek Naughty and Mike Pinnell are going to give you a little bit as well, but we know that they are based there to attack the run and that the pass rush is not the expectation from them. And quite frankly, any of the reserves, I don't know that you feel that you have a three technique that you can pass rush with in that group. Again, pass rush well out of the base or the bigger sets. Yes, they have plenty of guys. They have rotated from defensive end into three tech in specific pass rushing situations. And I think they do feel comfortable with a group of those. We just saw Breland Speaks looks like he's in much better shape this season than he was last. Let's hope that that's true and that it pays off as well. But I think all that may harken back to maybe that's part of what the Chiefs were doing in 2019 in rotating so many guys that they had listed at end into the tackle position to find out who might be able to fill in as a pass rusher on the inside. And what we've come to find is that they have a number of them. So I don't know what the base would be like. Certainly you'd be more stout against the run in the base, and you'd like to bring along Colin Saunders as a base three tech that can pass rush. But in designated pass rushing situations, I think they're very comfortable with Tonnell Passanio in there. They like Taco Charlton. They brought him in for that. They know Mike Dana is a prospect that they like to put in there. They have a lot of guys that they feel can rotate in at an interior pass rush position and pay some dividends. So I'll be interested to see how that comes out. Now, we'll have more as this develops, certainly this weekend, next. But when we get back, we're going to talk with Matt Derrick a little bit further about what the future might hold. The way that I took it from what we heard earlier in the week about the NFLPA contacting agents to make sure that they're passing on information from the CDC to the players, that kind of smacks a little bit for me of, hold on, we're not 100% sure that everybody's going to want to come to camp, however it's configured. Do you think that that might be something that we're going to see in the next couple of weeks? That, like you said, the 14th might be the breaking point?
Absolutely. I mean, I still say that, you know, this is a 39-step process and the NFL might be on step three now. There's still a long way to go before I think even beginning in training camp, because you're right. You need to have a grasp of who's going to want to show up, because I think you're absolutely, as you're seeing in Major League Baseball, the players opting out, you're going to have players to decide, you know what, this might not be in my best interest, or maybe they're just going to wait and see. Maybe they'll hold out to see what happens when everybody shows up. It's putting yourself at tremendous risk to all of a sudden, you know, go into a workplace where, let's face it, I mean, even bare bones when it comes to the players, coaches, equipment staff, training staff, I mean, 150 people to put on a practice is not uncommon. I mean, that's typically what it takes. So, you know, that's a lot of people to be putting in the one spot. And I can see certainly some players saying, you know, a lot, I'm going to just sit back and see what happens. I can see some players even just bailing completely. And we haven't gotten any answers yet on whether there's going to be a bubble or what the testing is going to be. And I can say the NFLPA, I mean, I would not blame them in the least that if they're going to say, look, we need to know all of this up front. We need to know what the plan is. We need to know what the testing is going to be. We need to know, you know, what's going to happen if there's an outbreak with a team. What's the procedures? Without having all those answers, I would be hard pressed as a player to show up. I think you got to know a lot more. And right now, we know nothing about what the NFL's plan is for training camp, much less the season.
Well, and I like that you bring up the bubble because that's, I think, the key to it all is having at least a concept of, are you going to try to literally quarantine the entire team and staff close there to the practice facilities? I can only think of one place that could house them all. Logistically, that is a possibility for Kansas City. It might not be for other teams, but that's got to be the groundwork to give you an area that you can control, right?
Yeah, I mean, that seems like it's the smartest thing to do. And I, it certainly seems also, I mean, there's some reluctance to do it because it's a drastic step. And we'll see. I mean, you know, what other sports go through over the next few weeks is going to be telling. I mean, once Major League Baseball players start showing up and you start doing some testing, that's going to be a key right there. We're already seeing in some of the other sports as guys are starting to get tested more and more that people are testing positive. I mean, until it happens, we just don't know. I mean, and that's why, I mean, there's nothing wrong with the NFL strategy of proceeding as normal and adapting as it changes and new information comes along. But, you know, yeah, at some point you can't do that. I mean, when it comes to the players and getting them in, you can't just say, show up and let's see what happens. The players want and need a long-term plan to know what to expect and how they're going to be protected.
And for the safety of their families and everything else, there are bigger question marks. And that leads me back to what you said earlier about the NFLPA needing to have that information. And if they don't, if we don't hear of a consolidated plan that isn't just specific to the Chiefs, but for the whole league, that will need to be applied in specific scenarios at every facility, really. Can you see the NFLPA putting the timeout and pushing back the season because they tell their players not to show up?
I think anything's on the table right now. I mean, I really do. I mean, and there's so much that's, you know, to be determined. I mean, we've seen some of the things in baseball. Obviously, the negotiations, a lot of it was just over the money and what players are going to be played. I think that the NFLPA would absolutely want to know that, too. If games are lost, how are the players going to be played? Is it still just going to be prorated? If there's an eight-game season, are players just going to be played for eight games? Is there going to be, you know, are the owners going to be wanting to try and negotiate even down from that? Like the Major League Baseball owners did. I mean, there's still so many moving parts to all of this. And that's why, yeah, I mean, there hasn't been any expressions yet. I mean, the NFLPA, no one in leadership has come out and said, you know what, we're not going to show up unless we have some answers. But that's partly because we're not there yet. I mean, there's no real benefit to negotiating publicly quite yet and airing that out. And to the NFL, I mean, they've got several committees that have been working on this, and they have done a pretty good job of keeping it below the radar. Right. I mean, there hasn't been a lot of leaks on it, but I know from talking to people that, yeah, I mean, there's been discussions about everything at some level, and it's just, it doesn't appear yet that it's gone to the ownership level and that it's gone to the NFLPA level, and that's where the rubber's going to hit the road. I mean, so that's, I still think there's a lot to decide, and yeah, could we get to July 15th and the NFLPA stands up and says at this point, we got too many questions. You know, we're not sure that players should show up. I mean, it could certainly happen.
And in a labor thing like that, we would expect to get a communication from NFLPA to its members telling them we're not endorsing going to camp. It would be a specific action. My question is going to be, and I have not been able to dig into the CBA, but I remember in the last CBA, there was a minimum number of games just to accrue a year.
Right.
We could be looking at having to go back and changing the CBA or reaching some kind of
ad hoc agreement about what constitutes a season this year.
Well, exactly. And you look at Major League Baseball with this 60-man roster that they're creating to basically kind of try and create that environment where you've got players that you can pull from with their, if there's injuries, if there's outbreaks, anything that you can do. What's the NFL going to do? I mean, if they do have a bubble, an NFL team would be hard pressed to be able to survive with a 12-man practice squad. You know, we've heard rumors of maybe 16. A lot of teams couldn't get through a season with a 16-man practice squad because they're going to have more injuries than that.
Yeah.
So where do these guys go? I mean, do you end up having a bubble of free agents that go somewhere and are isolated and quarantined that you can pull from? I mean, that's just one of dozens of questions that they've got to figure out. And that, I think, is going to be really difficult. And that's why I still say that, you know, the NFL is lucky that they can sit back and watch how some of the other leagues deal with it. But even on small things, I mean, we've seen the, you know, NFLPA coming out, it seems like every day with a new plea to players not to work out together.
Uh-huh.
And there's a reason for that. I mean, they're scared to death that if you, a lot of players get together and start working out, it's just going to be too easy for there to be an outbreak. They're going to show up at training camp. There's going to be a lot of positive tests. And then the whole business goes by the wayside.
Yeah. And that's my concern as well. In fact, I'm even to the point now where I had a discussion over the weekend, and my idea was generally just don't have cutdowns. You have a 90-man roster, keep the 90-man roster. There you have everybody that you've already identified as somebody that you think can help you in some way, can fit your system. And if you're talking about trying to build a bubble and stay at a specific hotel somewhere, most of them can accommodate 90 guys in single rooms and keep them separated enough. Do you think that that's something that we could see happen? Is the logistics of doing that in changing the structure of the roster itself, is that too much to overcome?
I don't think that it necessarily is. I mean, that would be I think the most logical solution would be to, if it's not an expanded, and I think that probably an expanded roster itself would be something that the owners would push back for just because it's a money thing. Mm-hmm. I think they're willing to say, hey, let's have as many practice squad slots as we want to, because those guys make a lot less money. Yeah. There's a lot less benefits involved and they don't accrue service. So, you know, that I think is, to a degree, I mean, I think the owners would be willing to say, yeah, if we want a 27-man practice squad, sure, let's go for it. I mean, that's not a problem. 37 guys? Okay, yeah, let's do that. They may not want to pay them as much because there's some guys in the practice squad that make some money, but it's what, $8,000, I think, is the minimum for a practice squad player per week. So, you know, it's that, I think, is the you know, the money is going to be a question as far as just how many players that they do bring into this. And the money is going to probably be a question on a lot of things because, you know, we know that the league has already said that, you know, they're going to sacrifice some seating, even if there are fans in the stands this season. Mm-hmm. And the money that they lose is just, that's real. And I think that, you know, the NFLPA is going to want some things. And if they want that, then I think the owners are also going to expect them to give a little bit on the money too.
You know, and I hadn't considered that aspect of it, but your reaction to that plan of blanketing off, I've heard anywhere from 8 to 40 rows nearest the players themselves. To me, that sounds like an action to protect the players and isolate the players and coaches. And here's another wrinkle that just came to mind. You have traveling referees. How are you going to isolate them? This seems all conjecture, but for the fans, if you're only going to have 25% capacity, sure, 50 gets a little bit iffy. But if you're taking out 25 rows, what does that do to your season tickets?
Well, exactly. I mean, and those, you know, some of those tickets are decently priced and everything. So yeah, I mean, that's a question how you're going to go about that. I still think that, you know, the NFL is going to have a huge question when it comes to competitiveness and just having a balanced playing field. Right now, we have situations where there are teams and states that could have fans in the stands and some who can't. So is the NFL really going to allow, you know, a team to have 50% capacity when another team is not allowed to have any fans at all in their stands? Is that a level playing field? I wouldn't want to play in that environment. I wouldn't want to know that I'm going to have to go on the road and play in front of 50,000 fans and I'm going to be at home playing in front of nobody.
Right.
You know, so
nobody wants to be the Chargers.
Yeah. And And if there is a reduced capacity, I mean, once again, that brings us back to the money again. It just lowers what the salary cap could be, which fuels everything else. It's just, it's hard pressed to me to see that, you know, if the players go into this expecting player safety to be their number one concern, they're going to have to give on the money because that's the owner's number one concern.
Yeah. So bottom line, do you see games being played in September as we stand right now?
I mean, I get every indication that the NFL wants to have that happen at all cost. I mean, maybe not quite all cost. I mean, I think there is absolutely concern from everybody for safety, and not just for the players, but for the coaches and the people around the team. Nobody wants this to end badly, but they also want it to go on. I mean, they think that absolutely they believe they can make it work. And, and some of that's simply because they don't know what's going to happen yet. I mean, I think the assumption that they're going to be able to play in September is based on players showing up and not a whole lot of positive tests, and that there are no outbreaks and everything's hunky dory. But the range of outcomes from people that I've talked to, there are people who absolutely believe that the NFL season will begin on time, maybe not fans, but it'll begin on time. And there are some, you know, at the other extreme who say that they don't believe that there's going to be an NFL game played this year. Wow. It's just simply that wide of opinions right now.
Well, I, for one, am hopeful that they're going to take a little bit of caution, because there is, I think, really the worst case scenario is, I think most of the players are going to be in a position, although we don't know the genetics of this particular virus, to be something that can be recovered from. But the worst thing the NFL wants is to see somebody. There's a lot of coaches that are getting up there in age, getting into the risk category. Pete Carroll, a number, it includes Andy Reid. He's getting very close to that age.
Yeah.
If a head coach gets this disease and is not able to recover from it, this is a PR nightmare for the league.
Yeah. And, you know, and you saw, you know, on Tuesday, there was a story that came out from the University of Illinois researcher there who just projected that, you know what, there's going to be fatalities in football bowl subdivision. I mean, there's just, the numbers predict that. And that changes everything. I mean, if there is a fatality in professional sports from this, I think that changes everybody's equation. And that's what everybody fears, is that, you know, that yes, you're going to have someone, because right now, I mean, we haven't seen that. We haven't seen the professional athlete or someone close to a team with a serious illness that has had trouble recovering. I mean, it just hasn't been publicized. So, but the moment that you do, that's going to change everybody's equation.
I think it is too. I'm really interested to see where it comes out. And we are still a few weeks away, folks. We'll have updates for you, and Matt will be back. He'll keep me honest so I don't get too far out there on what might happen. But thanks for your time and keeping me on the straight and narrow, Matt.
Hey, you keep me on the straight and narrow too, Ryan. So it goes both ways.
And thanks, folks. We'll be back with you tomorrow. Ryan Tracy is the founder of Rogue Analytics and the host of RGR Football on YouTube. Follow him there. Chris Clark is a senior analyst at ChiefsDigest.com, where you can get his work. Rate and review at Apple Podcasts and subscribe on your preferred podcast platform. Thank you for listening.